Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, a shakeup on the state Supreme Court with Liberal Justice Ann Walsh Branley announcing she won't seek re-election next year. Plus, the attempt to recall one of the most powerful GOP lawmakers has failed. Coming up, why organizers behind the effort are not giving up quite yet. And President Joe Biden returns to Wisconsin to unveil his new student loan cancellation plan. We tell you why it likely faces legal challenges. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for April 12th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We begin with a surprise announcement from a liberal justice who decided she is not going to be seeking re-election in 2025. We're talking about Justice Ann Walsh Branley, who originally told reporters last April that she is going to run again. So like I said, this took many people by surprise. Now, her decision, she said, did not come lightly, but a statement said, even though that I can win re-election should I run, it is time to pass on to the torch. Now, Branley was first elected to the Supreme Court in 1995 after serving 10 years as a Marathon County Circuit Court judge, and she was served for about nearly 30 years on the state's highest court. Now, we're going to dive into this quite a bit because, of course, there's already some names that have been floated out there that are considering running for her seat. We already know on the conservative side, former Attorney General Brad Schimmel has already announced a bid for her seat as well. But, you know, while this is a surprise, this is a big shakeup on the court because we know it just comes almost a year, exactly a year and a few weeks after Justice Jana Protasiewicz was sworn onto the bench, and they just secured a liberal majority for the first time in 15 years, which makes the seat a little bit up, a little bit more up for grabs than it was.
So look, incumbent justices do well in Wisconsin history. If you go back over the last, well, state's history, been three who have lost. Two of them were appointed. Justice Daniel Kelly in 2020 was trying to retain the seat that had been appointed by Scott Walker. Lewis Butler, 2008, trying to retain the seat that was appointed by Jim Doyle before that. Otherwise, 1967, Justice Curry had two things going against him. One, he was within 2 years of the mandatory retirement age in place at the time. And two, he signed the decision that said the state could not stop the Braves from leaving Milwaukee for Atlanta. So, rare instances. So, yes, if you have Ann Walsh Branley for liberals, you have an easier time holding that seat. What I'm watching for, though, is what happens this fall. And that might seem kind of weird, like why does this fall matter, but bear with me for a second. What happens this fall in the presidential race could dictate what the, where the energy is next spring. So go back and look, for example, 2018. There was a blue wave across the country. 2019, conservatives won the Supreme Court race. Now there was a complacency among liberals, people have argued to me, and there was a surge in conservative turnout for Brian Hagedorn. So there's one example of that. In 2017, liberals didn't even put anybody up against Annette Ziegler, the conservative justice at the time. Feeling they were kind of dispirited by what happened with Donald Trump. Now, there's some other things that were happening there. Don't forget, this is like before the party had kind of mastered the entire operation of big money donations and how to spend those. But they felt like Trump just won. We don't really feel like doing this. And she's also an incumbent. It's hard to beat her. There was so much energy that happened post-Trump's election and inauguration, they realized they missed an opportunity, at least maybe to make her sweat. So what I'm getting at is, this election will take place in April of 2025, the first 100 days of either Joe Biden's second term or Donald Trump's second with a break. If Trump were to win, think about what issues would be like in the forefront of people's minds. Abortion will be that much more, would be that much more of a factor because there's talk about a national abortion ban. Abortion drove a lot of things that happened in 2023. You could see that happen again. What I'm getting at too is these issues may matter somewhat more than who the players are. Candidate quality matters, but the issues are what could drive things. So that's something I'm watching, just kind of set the stage for this race.
Right, and Chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, Ben Wickler, was asked shortly after this announcement on Thursday morning, you know, what do you think about it? What are the issues that are going to define the race? And he once again reiterated that abortion is going to be center stage. We know it was a huge centerpiece of Janet Protasiewicz's campaign. And of course, we've talked about this before, JR, too, depending on how much the state Supreme Court takes up until 2025, that could be what's called red meat for conservatives if they, just examples, repeal Act 10, make some changes to election laws that anger Republicans. You know, we know that the abortion case is going to land there. Protasewicz has talked about her values and stuff like that. So that's something to watch for, is how many other cases they take up in the meantime until 2025. And is that something, I'm sure, that, you know, someone like a candidate, Brand Schimmel, will talk about quite a bit on the campaign trail. Now, like I mentioned, too, there are two Dane County judges that have already thrown their names out there for possibly running. We're talking about Susan Crawford and a former state representative, Chris Taylor. I spoke to both of them. Chris Taylor on the phone said she was strongly considering. Crawford, on the other hand, said she's going to take some time and we'll make a decision soon. So there could also be some other names that are out there as well.
So Pedro Colon, appeals court judge in Milwaukee, the first Hispanic to serve in the appeals court, also first Hispanic elected to the state legislature. He said he'll look at it. Look, lots of people will look at this because they were expecting Ann Walsh Bradley to run in 2025. So they're thinking they may run in 2026 when Justice Rebecca Bradley would be up, or 2027 when Zig would be up. So they were thinking, okay, I've got some time. Now the time is now. So what do you do? Okay, so looking at Crawford and Taylor, Crawford fits the profile of what's been successful for liberals in the last couple of races. She's female, she's a former prosecutor and a sitting judge. Protasewicz, Karofsky, and Dallet all check those boxes. Chris Taylor checks two of them. She's not a former prosecutor. That has been a big thing for liberals, because looking at spring races in general, the issues usually at play favor conservatives: law and order, law enforcement, public safety. Those three were able to not only run on their backgrounds as prosecutors, but actually turn the tables on their opponents a little bit and kind of sometimes paint them as soft on crime. Mm-hmm. Could Chris Taylor do that? Now, the flip side is these races have gotten way more partisan. Look at last spring, and Chris Taylor has thrown elbows, sharp elbows, in a very partisan realm. She's been in the assembly for 9 years on the Joint Finance Committee. She's done that kind of like, you know, debate, that intense throwing elbows in politics. Crawford has not. She had a tight race for Dane County Circuit Court in 2018, but that's a different animal, mm-hmm. what we're talking about. So there's that.
A lot of things, a lot more things to nitpick per se, you know, on the campaign trail.
So then two, does it matter? In a spring race, is it all about your base? Is it about who is the fighter who inspires the most passion among their base? That could be all. So for Chris Taylor, that could paper over, you know, maybe that lack of prosecutorial experience. Colon, people I've talked to aren't sure that he's as kind of there when it comes to like considering as Crawford and Taylor are. Others, the progressive side, will probably think about it. On the conservative side, there is some talk, will somebody else emerge from that side of the aisle? Because, you know, Schimmel announced when he was taking on an incumbent. That's not an easy thing to do. He also lost statewide once before. Not a great thing in your resume when you're running for a statewide election again. Marie Lazar is an appeals court judge in the 2nd District. She's been telling me for months she's thinking about it. Now, she worked for Brad Schimmel when they're both at Department of Justice, so there's a thought that maybe that'd be tougher to challenge her old boss. Mm-hmm. But will some of the conservative merge and say, hey, this is an open seat. You know, Brad's out there ahead, but maybe not that far ahead. To Schimmel's credit, announcing early in November of 23 has worked out for him. He is the leader for the conservative mantle. He's been raising money. He's been already been talking on the rubber chicken circuit, we call it, you know, going to all these events. He's out there ahead. You got to catch him now. If you're a conservative, you want to run for Supreme Court, you got to catch Brad Schimmel.
Right, and money is always a factor, of course. So the last state Supreme Court race was the most expensive in U.S. history. You know, possibly, maybe some rumors that could happen again remains to be seen, but that's also something in any statewide race, you need to have some money behind you. All right, let's get to some other topics this week, and we're talking about the recall against Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Well, officially now, after the State Elections Commission voted, the first attempt by recall organizers was rejected. And this was kind of, you know, we saw this in the future, given that an initial review said they didn't believe they had enough signatures. Well, after combing through a pile of more than 10,000, this is kind of the final determination. However, organizers of the recall have already launched a second petition against seeking to remove Voss. And the main reason of this is the ongoing challenge of what district should you be collecting signatures in. Of course, the review by WEC determined there was a certain amount in his old district and his new district. Well, now organizers are trying to gather, you know, signatures in both to have enough for that threshold. And this was a topic that came up during the WEC meeting on Thursday because there is still no clarity. Of course, we've tried to ask the state Supreme Court. I should say we, as in the state, has asked the state Supreme Court. They bounced it back to WEC. Hey, you need to make a decision. So let's just hear a little bit about this debate from both commissioners on the Republican and Democratic side, still talking about how are we going to figure this out in the future.
My mind is you've articulated that the recall was in old District 63, and the only thing I have to decide today is whether you had sufficient signatures, that means i.e. 6850 or more, and you don't. So that's it.
Did we have enough signatures or did we not? And as you can see, the commission staff looked at it from every single angle. And no matter which angle they looked at, the petitions were woefully short of the required number of signatures to make this a valid type situation. So it's in this particular situation, for this particular petition, it's very easily, as everybody else is now saying, Mr. Millis and Thompson and so forth, it's an arithmetic problem. You just didn't get enough signatures.
Commissioners didn't make a decision on this. So once again, we're in no man's land.
So interesting. Michael Gableman, former Supreme Court Justice, turned enemy of Robin Voss, was representing the recall petitioners at the hearing. He kept pushing the commissioners for a decision, not because of the first filing, but because of the second one. They want direction. The issue is the Elections Commission doesn't offer advisory opinions unless you formally ask them for one. They kept saying, you have not asked for this opinion. Ergo, we can't give you an opinion. Gableman got quite combative during the hearing, called the legal counsel for the commission condescending and wrong at one point, and Jacobs, a Democratic appointee, chided Gableman because he couldn't answer a question, and he kind of went, well, I guess you can say whatever you want to say. She said, that's right, because I'm a commissioner and you're a guest. So it was not a very pleasant conversation. So the pullback is the first effort had all kinds of problems with it, allegations of fraud. The commission also declined an overture from Voss's attorney to begin a criminal investigation of those who circulate petitions, say, look, we have to have a special request to do that because you guys, Republican lawmakers, banned us from starting investigations on our own because of John Doe probe of Scott Walker years ago in the old Government Accountability Board. They said, if you file the petition for an investigation, we can do that. So there's that piece. Gableman kept saying, we want to know which district we got to use because of the second one. They don't care about the first one anymore. Gableman claimed at one point that this effort had been infiltrated by people from Florida and out of state, and they were sabotaged, his words, on this effort. But he wanted to say, what district's in place? And he kept telling the commissioners, you guys told us the 63rd, which is Robin's old district. So remember, the old maps from 2022, Robin Voss elected the 63rd Assembly District. The new map that was signed after the first petitions were circulated, but not before they were turned in, he was moved to the 33rd Assembly District. Gableman said, you guys told us the 63rd that this many signatures were needed. They said, yes. We gave you a calculation, not an opinion. There's a difference there. So now in the second effort, they're going, they don't know for sure which lines to use, and we don't have a map in place still. The commission, in theory, has the ability to say, this is the map. They haven't done that yet. So now we sit here, the people going off to Robin Voss are circling nomination papers, or recall petitions again, trying to get enough needed to go after him in his, they're targeting the 63rd, from what I've been told. And Gableman is in combat again with Robin Voss. Remember, Gableman's hired to do the review of the 2020 election. Robin Voss fired him, calling him an embarrassment. That investigation has racked up $2.7 million in costs for taxpayers, according to my tally, between legal bills, the investigation itself, and now to cover the cost of a a ethics complaint against Gableman. So that's a whole other ball of wax. And it was quite the hearing for Thursday night.
And it was work that he did that did not conclude any widespread evidence of fraud in the 2020 election. Also worth noting, too, a lot of those fraudulent signatures are now being investigated by the Racine County District Attorney, which they are still working on that we've talked about before. All right, let's move on to kind of just going to highlight some
new districts, who's running, who's retiring. We're talking about maps, right? Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot of things going on in the legislature. And Jerry, you've done a really good job of tracking on your website who's going where, because mm-hmm. it is a constant circus, I could say, of determining where people are going, if they're staying, if they're moving, et cetera. So we're going to highlight two districts. First, we're going to start with a second district. After the longest serving senator, Republican Rob Coles, announced that he will not be seeking re-election. So looking at his district here, we have the lawmaker that's moving into it is Senator Wimberger from Green Bay. Another candidate is Kelly Peterson from De Pere, that is a Democrat who is looking at that seat as well. And if you look at kind of the performance in that district specifically, it leans 65, a little bit more than 65% Republican. On the other hand, looking at the 7th Assembly District, the lawmaker that was drawn into that is Representative Daniel Reamer from Milwaukee, a Democrat, and Bob Donovan said he's actually going to be moving into that after these new maps were enacted. Another candidate on the Republican side is Lee Edward Whiting, who is looking at the district, and this district is now about 60% Democratic leaning.
So if you go to our website, there's a feature we're going to have up there through June 3rd, which is the deadline to file nomination papers, that you can track who's coming and going. We've been tracking registrations filed with the Elections Commission, as well as announcements. The ones I want to highlight first in the second district, Rob Coles, like I said, long-serving lawmaker in Wisconsin currently, he was all prepared to move from the 30th, where he was run into, to the 2nd. That's an interesting seat. You had a pairing of three different Republican lawmakers in that district under Governor Evers' maps. One is Coles, who was elected to the 2nd district in 2020. One, Eric Wimberger, elected to the 30th district in 2020. And one was Andre Jacques, elected to the 1st in 2022. Now, Jacques, you can move out of that equation because the belief is if you're elected to an odd-numbered Senate district in 2022, you can hold that seat through 2026, even if you were drawn into a different district. You have to move to keep holding it. Andre's also running for the 8th Congressional District, so put him aside for now. Wimberger, elected the 30th, was looking at the seat going, okay, my seat where I live is now a 52% Democratic seat, 53% somewhere in there. Rob, elected the 2nd district, goes, hey, that's my district by my number. It's also a 65% Republican seat. I'm going to move there. Then Eric went, wait a second, that's a better seat for me than this one is. I've got ties there, my family has a business there, Wimbergers are from that area originally, I'm gonna make my move here and run in that seat. Now, honestly, talking to people this week, it's kind of a jerk move. It's also a very smart one politically, and all is fair in love, war, and politics, right? Mm-hmm. So Rob Coles was faced with a choice. Am I gonna face somebody who is younger than I am, more conservative than I am, in a redder district than I've had before? That's a tough one. Rob also would be 78 years old when the next term would be up. There's a number of factors that you put to play, go, okay, it was time to say, I've had enough. I don't think he wanted to leave, right. But the reality of the situation said, okay, maybe it's time to hang it up. Now the 30th, Republicans also have a new candidate announced this week, an Alouez Village Trust, our president, I believe, running as Jamie Wall, ran for Congress about 12 years ago up there. That's gonna be a real race, one that Democrats have to win to put them on the path to win the majority in 2026, because remember, aren't enough seats up this fall they could win to flip the majority in the Senate this year. Now that Assembly seat, what's interesting is example of a Republican drawn into a very Democratic seat going, okay, I'm going somewhere else. Bob Donovan moving to the 61st Assembly District. Lou Anne Bird, he ran against 2 years ago in a different numbered district. It's gonna be a rematch in that seat. It's a swing seat, pure on the numbers, 50-50 seat. We also saw Rob Witke, a Republican from Racine area, drawn just into a very Democratic seat. He's going to move to Republican one. You're seeing this kind of cascading effect. Republicans going, okay, I'm in this district, but this one next door is way better for me. I'm going to move there. Or like a John Plumer up in Lodi saying, you know what, I'm done. John Plumer of Lodi and William Penterman were drawn into the same seat for 55% Democratic district. Penterman said, I'm going to move to over here and run a Republican seat. Plumer said, I'm done. What I'm getting at is Monday is the first day of certified nomination papers. We will see really, there are about a half dozen lawmakers left who haven't announced what they're gonna do. That should come into focus the next couple, 3 weeks. Then we'll know the maps, or at least the players kind of for sure. Although there's one caveat left. I talked about the maps are in place, right? We have a vacancy in the 4th Senate District. Lakeisha Myers and Dora Drake both won that special election. They're both Democrats in Milwaukee, very Democratic seats. They love that special election, the primary to happen before June 3rd. So they could know, am I going to be in the state Senate going forward, or should I run for my assembly seat again? There's a clock ticking on that right now that's proving problematic for both of them.
Right, and I will say the housing market is still not great. Yes. So if you want to time this out, it's going to be, you probably should start looking now if you're wanting to move, because it could take some time. All right, let's go continuing on our kind of legislative roundup. We're going to highlight some bills that were signed this week and vetoed. Starting with the veto, it was a GOP bill that would have allowed 14 and 15-year-olds to work in Wisconsin without a permit. Currently, workers younger than 16 do need a permit with some exceptions in agriculture and domestic work. This was part of a package of bills that Republicans passed that they believed would start helping easing the worker shortage. Meanwhile, Governor Evers argued, 14, 15-year-olds should not be working in these positions. Meanwhile, a bipartisan bill was signed by the governor as well this week that would address gaps in the state's Amber Alert system, and it would expand the criteria when an alert is issued for missing children. Previously, under the last system, there would have to be information on a suspect's vehicle or more about the individual themselves when it comes to issuing an Amber Alert. And this was also in the wake of two very tragic deaths of children that Lily Peters up north and Prince McCree in the Milwaukee area. And what was unique about this bill and following this, of course, it was an issue for Milwaukee, but also up north a few years ago with Lily Peters, is that you saw quite a lot of bipartisanship, too, with Senator Jesse James and Senator LaTanya Johnson come together, kind of really try to get this across the finish line. There was some rumors that maybe it wasn't going to pass, but in the end it did, and we saw good bipartisanship on that issue. All right, let's move on to our next topic, which is just recapping President Biden. He was here in Madison on Madison College to tout his new plan to cancel student loan debt. Now, the series of proposals largely target the accrued and capitalized interest on student loans. For example, individuals who are paying more than their original loan would see some relief under the plan. I've been in this boat before. I only took out a certain amount. Well, the interest is built on that over time. Even though you keep paying, you're still paying on the interest first before lowering that amount. Let's just hear a little bit from the president talk about this, because the challenge going forward with his student loan debt plan is that it is likely going to face some hurdles, possible legal challenges. After last year, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down his original plan that would have canceled debt for about $40 billion. Let's take a listen.
Today, too many Americans, especially young people, are saddled with unsustainable debts in exchange for a college degree. The ability for working and middle-class folks to repay their student loans has become so burdensome that a lot can't repay it for even decades after being in school. Tens of millions of people's debt was literally about to get canceled. But then some of my Republican friends and elected officials and special interests sued us, and the Supreme Court blocked us. But that didn't stop us. No, I mean it sincerely. We continue to find alternatives past to reduce student debt payments.
So like I mentioned, while this stuff looks good on paper, it remains to be seen when people can actually start seeing relief. Now, the president did say likely by this fall. Well, maybe that's aligning specifically when there's an election around. Of course, these Republicans also call these a lot of things like election year gimmicks, but both sides do them. I mean, to get the headlines out there, but we'll see where this goes in the near future. All right, let's get to stock picks this week, and we're going to start with Rising, and we're going to be talking about national PFAS standards, JR.
Yes. Why I want to talk about the national ones is because they're getting something done, whereas in the state level, we're not. So the Fed set a new standard, which is not nearly as stringent as Wisconsin's is. But the big thing going on in Wisconsin is Governor Evers vetoed the PFAS bill that Republicans approved, and the standoff continues. So the backstory is there was $125 million put in the budget to address PFAS. Basically, it was, okay, Republicans saying, we'll spend this money once we get a plan that we all agree on. They couldn't agree on a plan. The hook, or the rub, has been there is a provision for what they called innocent landowners, people who they didn't put the PFAS contamination there, and Republicans want to make sure they're not on the hook to pay for the cost. The governor has said over and over again, the way you've got it drafted, you're undercutting DNR's ability to enforce things, and we also worry you're protecting people who were intentional polluters. It goes round and round and round, where they keep accusing each other of not knowing what's going on. So what's going to happen to that money? It sits there. What options the governor have, unless he can find another way to get money into this issue. I don't know what he's got left for example, federal COVID funds. There's a way to kind of direct that toward that. He's been creative with those before. But we have a standoff, much like repealing the personal property tax a few years ago, where there was money in the budget to do it. They couldn't agree on the language. It took the next budget to actually get it done. Will this take another 2 years? advocates hope not. But right now we're at the standoff and nobody's giving an inch on the PFAS issue.
Right, and the governor tried to get creative by calling a special meeting for Joint Finance to come back. Of course, he has the authority to call a special session, but a special meeting, I mean, Joint Finance can come back whenever they want. So in a sense, it was him trying to take another step towards urging them and calling them to do it. But like you said, I mean, the legislative session is technically over. I mean, they can always come back, but...
Evers tried a special meeting thing 5 years ago, 2019, on homelessness. So the governor has the power to call Joint Finance Committee, the Budget Committee, to meet. You can't force them to
force
meet.
Force them, yes.
And what happened that meeting 5 years ago was Democrats showed up from the committee and had a hearing but couldn't do anything because they didn't have a quorum to actually act upon the request. So we will probably see something similar. I believe the special meeting is set for this week, this coming week, where the Democrats will come in and complain about Republicans and PFAS, and nothing will get done.
It looks a lot like special sessions.
Yeah.
And we have a few Democratic lawmakers on the floor, and Republicans don't show up as well because they don't have to. All right, let's get to Mix this week, and we're talking about Tony Wield, who is the latest candidate who received the Trump endorsement for a congressional seat.
And we're going to find out how important that endorsement is for Donald Trump in a Republican primary. So Tony Wield, he owned a chain of convenience stores up in northeastern Wisconsin, sold it in 2022. He hasn't been really involved politically. I went and looked in the state's campaign finance database. He gave like $300 to the Brown County GOP in March of this year. He made a donation to Donald Trump in February this year. Otherwise, that's it. Like, that's his entire donor history. Normally, if you're an engaged person politically and you've got money, you're giving donations. People there don't really know him very well, other than like in the business community. He's not known politically. What he's got going for him is a Trump apparatus. The question is, does this Trump apparatus from out of state translate into a state operation? So Alex Brezowitz, who talked about thinking about running before, the official story is Alex Brezowitz was thinking about running for the 8th Congressional District, met with Tony, was so impressed and said, hey, you should run instead. And Tony took that mantle and ran. The unofficial belief is that Alex Brezowitz, his firm X Strategies, has been paid $1.6 million by campaigns and organizations since 2020. It's a political consulting firm. That's a lot of money to give up to run for Congress, especially when you're not from the 8th Congressional District. You're from Ripon, which is in the 6th Congressional District, and you've lived in Florida for the last 3 years, so you're not even in the state to run for Congress. So Brezowitz has now a candidate to get behind. Trump has endorsed him, but what's he going to build locally? You have Roger Roth, who was a state senator from Appleton, former state senator from Appleton, who's running. He announced raising $380,000 for his campaign so far in 6 weeks. Andre Jacques raised $140,000 in 4 weeks. He's got a record in Wisconsin. Roger Roth has a record in Wisconsin. Tony does not. Is a Trump endorsement enough to kind of overcome it? That's what I'm watching. There's going to be fascinating.
Right on the Democratic side, the Kristen Lyerly announced not too long ago she's running for that seat as well. She's a nurse and practitioner.
She raised $125,000 in 24 hours.
Look at that, right? A lot of money on the line. All right, and following this week is DNR secretary. Why? Because there still is none.
So I asked the governor, back in November, Adam Payne left the job, citing family obligations, other things. Talked to Governor Evers in January, said, are you having a hard time finding a secretary? He said, hell yes. And the reason is because Republicans keep rejecting my nominees, including a bunch of them for the DNR board. Fast forward to this week. Governor Evers has three vacancies in his cabinet right now. Peter Barker at Revenue, Kevin Carr at Corrections, and DNR. He said, we'll have something soon on corrections and revenue, not so much in the DNR. And again, because of all the rejections of his appointments, there have been 22 executive branch appointees rejected by Republicans since Evers took office. There had been four, I believe, in the 40 years before that. And Evers is saying, I can't find somebody. Keep going, if I take this job, I could get fired the first time I tick off Republican lawmakers. It's a challenge.
It sure is. All right, that will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.